Okay, good afternoon, everyone. I just want to begin, of course, obviously we're in the midst of a very difficult time for Klal Yisrael, and our learning should be in the memory of all the lives taken, and a tefillah sheyomar v'tzaroseinu dai. So we're going to begin this week preparing for Shavuos through the lens of Parshas Bahar B'chukosai. So the Torah at the end of the Tochacha in Parshas B'chukosai, Perek Chav Vav, Pasuk Mem Vav of Sefer Vayikra, says, Eila ha-chukim ve-amishpatim ve-ha-toros, asher nasan Hashem be-no-vim b'nei Yisrael b'har Sinai b'yad Moshe. These are all of the laws and the decrees and the toros that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Klal Yisrael at Har Sinai. So the Torah here recaps the laws that were given to Klal Yisrael, and it characterizes them as toros, the multiple or the plural of toros. And the Sifra, the Medrash Halacha, derives from that language that the Pasuk here refers to both Torah Shebichsav and also Torah Shebaal Peh, to the two sections, the two forms of Torah. And thus implying that Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh were both given at Har Sinai. And of course, Rashi references this earlier in the Parsha as well, Ma Inyan Shmita Itzel Har Sinai, that all of the Dukdukim of Torah Shebaal Peh were also given at Har Sinai. So what exactly is the relationship between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh? Of course, this is a murky, complex relationship. On the one hand, Torah Shebichsav appears to take precedence to Torah Shebaal Peh in many respects, and especially with respect to matters of Kedusha. There's a very interesting tshuva of the Rimi Gash, which is in Simen Tzadi Beis, where the Rimi Gash explains that Torah Shebaal Peh is the explanation of Torah Shebichsav, but not Amita Shel Torah, not the truth, not the essence, not like the basic of Torah. And therefore, the books of Torah Shebaal Peh should not be placed on top of the books of Torah Shebichsav of Tanakh. But on the other hand, we have evidence that Torah Shebaal Peh seems to take precedence to Torah Shebichsav in other respects. For example, the Gemara in Gittin, Daf Samach Amid Bey, says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Kores Bris. He makes a covenant with Klal Yisrael only Bishvil Devarim Shebaal Peh, on account of Torah Shebaal Peh. So what exactly is the need to have both Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh? And how do we explain this complex relationship that exists between them? So today I'd like to try to delve into those questions just a little bit, specifically through the lens of an interesting sugya also there in Maseches Gittin on Daf Samach Amid Beis, the sugya of Dvarim Shebichsav Iyata Rashai Le'omram Baal Peh, Udvarim Shebaal Peh Iyata Rashai Le'omram Bichsav, the prohibition to recite orally Torah Shebichsav and to write Torah Shebaal Peh. Of course, just as a matter of introduction, the prohibition to write Torah Shebaal Peh no longer is in practice bizman hazeh because of Eis la'asos la'Hashem eifiru sorasecha, because we are no longer able to maintain the oral transmission and tradition of Torah Shebaal Peh. We are forced to write it. But prior to that enactment of Eis la'asos, there was a prohibition to record Torah Shebaal Peh in writing, and in parallel, there's a prohibition to recite Torah Shebichsav orally. So again, as I said, the source for this din is the Gemara in Gittin Samach Amid Beis, which teaches the interpretation of Rabbi Yehuda Bar Nachmeni, who derives the following pasuk: Kesov lecha es hadvarim ha'ilah. So pasuk in Parshas Kisisa, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu that he should record the Torah. Kesov lecha es hadvarim ha'ilah ki al pi hadvarim ha'ilah, because based on these words, karati itcha bris ve'es Yisrael. So here we have Torah referred to in two different ways. On the one hand, we have Ksov Lecha Es Hadvarim Ha'ilah. Torah is referred to in the form of writing. And then on the other hand, Ki Al Pi Hadvarim Ha'ilah. Torah is referred to in the form of oral transmission. So from these two references, from these two ways of describing Torah, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Nachmeni derives that Dvarim Shebichsav Iyat HaRashay Le'omrim Baal Peh, we are not allowed to recite orally Dvarim Shebichsav, Torah Shebichsav. And on the other hand, Dvarim Shebaal Peh Iyat HaRashay, we are not allowed to write the Torah Shebaal Peh. what lies behind each one of these prohibitions. So let's take each one at a time. Let's begin with the prohibition of Amiras Devarim Shebichsav, reciting the written Torah. What's the reasoning for that prohibition? So some of the Rishonim take a more pragmatic approach to this prohibition. The Tosos Rid in Megillah Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph explains that we're concerned for mistakes. If one starts to recite the written Torah orally, we're worried that he's going to recite the Torah mistakenly. He's going to insert words that are not there or omit words that are there. It's going to lead to mistakes. The Yireim in Simon Reish Samach Ches explains another pragmatic concern of misimpression, that if you have people who hear others reciting Dvarim Shebichsav without the text, then they may start to claim that the written text is not actually written, but it's fabricated by those who are reciting it. It's fabricated by the Chachamim, and of course we don't want to lead to that misimpression. So therefore, Torah Shebichsav should remain Dvarim Shebichsav. It should remain jointed to the text. Others, such as Rabbeinu Kreskes in Maseches Gittin, Daf Samach Amid Beis, explains that the reasoning for this prohibition is to ensure the quality of one's Talmud Torah, of one's Torah study. He explains that without studying the Torah from the text of the Torah, one is unable to extrapolate all of the teachings that we can from the letters of the Torah. Oftentimes in the Torah we have additional or missing letters, and those are intended to teach certain drashos, to teach certain dinim. So without the connection to the text, one is missing the full gamut of that which he can derive from the text, and therefore his Talmud Torah will be diluted. So we have some Rishonim who take a pragmatic approach, some Rishonim who orient this around Talmud Torah, and then there are others, such as the Brisker Rav, the Griz in the stencils, in the notes of the Talmidim of the Brisker Rav, Maseches Temura, Daf Yud Dalet Amid Beis, which is another context in which these prohibitions arise. So the Brisker Rav makes a more fundamental argument, that the prohibition to recite orally Dvarim Shebichsav really flows from the entity, from the status of Dvarim Shebichsav. Torah is nitan likasev. It's given for the purpose of being recorded, of being written. So to recite Dvarim Shebichsav orally would be to undermine the very definition of Dvarim Shebichsav. Dvarim Shebichsav are intended, their telos is to be written. So if we say them orally without connecting ourselves to the text, so then we are undermining, we're contradicting the very definition, the very nature, the very essence of Dvarim Shebichsav. What are some of the nafkamina between these different approaches? So there's an interesting question about the scope of this prohibition. Does the prohibition apply even when one studies alone? Or does it apply only when one is reading the text for others? So this was a machlokas between the Rishonim. The Tur in Orach Chaim Simen Mem Tes, which is where the Shulchan Aruch discusses this prohibition, cites his father the Rush, and the Gra in the Shulchan Aruch there also agrees that this prohibition applies only when reading the Torah for others. It doesn't apply when studying the Torah on one's own. However, the Ritva in Aseches Yuma, Daf Ayin Amud Aleph, assumes that the prohibition applies even when one is studying by himself. So what's the Nekudas HaMachlokas here? So the Yireim that we quoted before, the Yireim who took a pragmatic approach to the prohibition, namely that we're concerned for the misimpression that's going to be caused when others see Dvarim Shebichsav being said orally without connection to the text. So the Yireim explains that because the whole Mechayiv of the prohibition, because the whole basis for the prohibition is the misimpression that will be caused and the misunderstanding that others around will have, so therefore the prohibition applies only when there is someone who's saying the Torah and someone who's listening to the Torah. There have to be others around in order for the prohibition to apply, because otherwise the reasoning for the prohibition just doesn't get started. But if you take the Brisker Rav's approach, that the whole idea of Dvarim Shebichsav Iatai Rashai LeOmram Baal Peh is to preserve the entity of Dvarim Shebichsav. That Dvarim Shebichsav are nitan likasev, they're given for the purpose of writing. And when we say them without connection to the text, we are undermining their very definition. So then I don't see why we should distinguish between when one is reciting those Dvarim Shebechsav for others, or when one is studying them alone. After all, the Dvarim Shebechsav, their definition, their very nature is to be written. So when we study them, we should be connected to the text. That should be the case whether we recite them for others or whether we recite them on our own. So that is the first prohibition, namely Dvarim Shebechsav Yatai Rashai L'Omrim Ba'alpeh. What about the other prohibition, the parallel one, Dvarim Shebe'alpeh Yatai Rashai L'Omrim Bechsav, the prohibition to write Dvarim Shebe'alpeh? What's the whole reasoning for this prohibition? So here the Rishonim again, have a number of approaches. Rabbeinu Kreskes, the same Rabbeinu Kreskes from the previous piece, also takes a more pragmatic approach to this prohibition. And he says that if we start to write down Dvarim Shebaal Peh, then there's going to be a concern for inaccuracies. We all know that once certain content, subject matter, is committed to text, so then we run the risk of having different versions of the text. When we have different people recording the same text, each one is going to record it according to his understanding, and that could lead to varieties, variations, that could lead to inaccuracies that weren't meant to be part of that subject matter. Whereas, if we maintain the oral transmission of the Torah, so then the person receiving the Torah is going to be much more painstaking with ensuring that he fully understands what the subject matter means to say, and then we'll be able to maintain the accuracy of Dvarim Shebaal Peh. The Prisha quotes the Ran, who takes a similar approach, again just saying that the Dvarim Shebaal Peh ensures that the person who receives the Dvarim Shebaal Peh, who learns the oral transmitted Torah, is going to understand it to his fullest capacity, and he's not going to rely on the ability to learn it from Dvarim Shebechsav, from a written text. Sometimes when one has the ability to see something from a text, so he's not as driven to fully understand that which he is studying. However, if he knows that his only opportunity to understand the subject matter is to fully comprehend it from the person who's teaching it to him, so then he's going to go to the greatest lengths in order to understand it fully. And thereby, we will be able to maintain, again, the accuracy and the integrity of the Dvarim Shebaal Peh being passed down from generation to generation. That's one approach of Rabbeinu Kreskes and the Ran. There's another approach that is offered by the Maharal in his Perush on Chumash in the Gur Aryeh, also na pasuk in Kisisa Kesov Dachas Advarim Ha'ila. The Maharal says very beautifully that to write down Dvarim Shebaal Peh would be to make an infinite subject matter fixed. It would be to give a certain permanence, a certain limitation to Dvarim Shebaal Peh, whereas Dvarim Shebaal Peh are meant to be infinite. Dvarim Shebaal Peh have an infinite scope. They can be plumbed to an infinite depth. Dvarim Shebaal Peh, of course, have the capacity for chiddush. They have the capacity to be understood differently during each generation. Of course, not to change the Dvarim Shebaal Peh, but to gain new insight into the Dvarim Shebaal Peh, and thereby be applied from generation to generation. So to write down Dvarim Shebaal Peh, to write down the oral transmitted Torah, would be to give a fixed structure to the Dvarim Shebaal Peh, and thereby would undermine and contradict the very essence of Torah Shebaal Peh. Just as there are nafkamina between the different approaches for Dvarim Shebechsav Yatai Rashai L'Omrim Ba'alpeh, so too there are certain practical ramifications for Dvarim Shebaal Peh Yatai Rashai L'Omrim Bechsav. For example, is one allowed to write Dvarim Shebaal Peh for himself? So the Briska Rav, in that same piece, in Maseches Temura, Daf Yud Dalet Amud Beis, he addresses this question as well. And the Briska Rav explains that according to the Rambam, and this is the Rambam in the Hakdama to the Perush Mishnayos, the practice was, from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu all the way down to the Zakenim and all the way down to Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, the practice was for the Zakein, for the elder Chacham of each generation, to keep a notebook, to keep a record of the Torah that he received from his Rebbeim, and thereby he would use that record to transmit it to transmit that Torah to future generations. So what you see from the Hakdama of the Perush Mishnayos, says the Brisker Rav, is that apparently writing down Dvarim Shebaal Peh, keeping a record, keeping a notebook of that which one received, is perfectly permitted. Apparently, the only problem of writing down Dvarim Shebaal Peh is when one is doing so for the purpose of education. The truth is that there's a very intriguing diuk, a very intriguing inference from a Rashi in Maseches Gittin. Rashi on this suga of Dvarim Shebichsav Yatai Rashi Lo'omer Ma'al Peh, Dvarim Shebaal Peh Yatai Rashi Lo'omer Bichsav, when he explains Dvarim Shebichsav Yatai Rashi, I'm sorry, Dvarim Shebaal Peh Yatai Rashi Lo'omer Bichsav, that one is not allowed to write down the written, the oral Torah, Rashi adds in the word Limosron Bichsav. One is not allowed to transmit the oral Torah via the form of Ksiva, via the form of writing. And the Torah Tamima wonders, where did Rashi get this from? Why should it matter whether one is transmitting the Torah or one is just learning the Torah on his own? But apparently, what the Brisker Rav is inferring from the Rambam, and maybe this is the case from Rashi as well, and that's why Rashi picks out this word, Limosron Bechsav, apparently, the prohibition to write down the oral Torah is limited to the realm of transmission. That when one is trying to educate, when one is trying to transmit the oral Torah, it is prohibited to do so in the form of ksiva. Rather, it has to be ish mi pi ish, it has to be from person to person all the way down the line. To do so in the form of writing would be prohibited. However, to keep a record for oneself, just to remind oneself of what the Torah Shebaal Peh that he studied is, that would be perfectly permitted. So what emerges from this analysis of these prohibitions of Dvarim Shebichsav Yatai Rashi Lo'omer Bichsav, Dvarim Shebaal Peh Yatai Rashi Lo'omer Bichsav, what emerges from this analysis of these two prohibitions, the parallel prohibitions? So apparently we have the possibility that the prohibition of Amiras Dvarim Shebichsav, of reciting orally the written word, the written Torah, so that focuses on the form of Dvarim Shebichsav. That Dvarim Shebichsav were nitan lekasev, as the Brisker Rav said. They were given for the purpose of being recorded. And therefore, to recite them without connection to the text would be to undermine their very definition. But the prohibition of ksivas Dvarim Shebaal Peh, the prohibition of writing down the oral Torah, focuses less on the form itself, but more on the transmission, on the education of Torah Shebaal Peh, the giving of Torah Shebaal Peh from person to person. And therefore, we'll have the exception that when one studies Torah Shebaal Peh on his own, there would be no problem to write it. It's only writing it for the purpose of transmitting it. Because Torah Shebaal Peh is the transmitted Torah. Torah Shebichsav is the fixed, written word, and therefore we have an emphasis on its form, whereas Torah Shebaal Peh is the transmitted, educated word, and therefore we have an emphasis on its method of transmission. So if we come back to our original question, the two Toros, Torah Shebichsav, Torah Shebaal Peh, what's the relationship between them? In some ways, Torah Shebichsav seems to take precedence to Torah Shebaal Peh, and in other ways, Torah Shebaal Peh seems to take precedence to Torah Shebichsav. How do we explain that complex relationship? So Mori Verabi of Rosenzweig explained, as we've tried to flesh out, that Torah Shebichsav is the fixed divine word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ramban ala Torah in his Hakdama to his Perush ala Torah explains that Torah Shebichsav is really an amalgam of Shemos Shel Hashem. That if we had the ability to see in all of the psukim and in all of the matching of the words, Shemos of Hashem, then we would be able to actually ascertain that all of Torah Shebichsav is just Shemos Hashem. Torah Shebichsav is the divine word. It's the Gilui Shechina, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's word itself. And that being the case, it's very important that it be permanent, that it be fixed, that it take on the form of Ksiva. And on that basis, we can understand why the Kedusha of Torah Shebichsav takes precedence to the Kedusha of Torah Shebaal Peh. Why Torah Shebichsav is placed on top of Torah Shebaal Peh. But on the other hand, Torah Shebaal Peh is not recorded because not just because of the impossibility of capturing and writing all of Torah Shebaal Peh. That's certainly the case, and some Rishonim say that. But not just because of that, but because fundamentally, Torah Shebaal Peh is intended to be an evolving system that's plumbed, that's developed, that's applied b'chol dor v'dor in each and every generation by the Chachamim and by Klal Yisrael in each and every generation. And therefore, to commit Torah Shebaal Peh to a fixed, permanent ksav would be, as the Maharal said, to undermine its very purpose. And that's why the Gemara in Gittin says that the Kadosh Baruch Hu was Koreis Bris with Klal Yisrael, specifically because on Bishvil, Torah Shebaal Peh. Because Torah Shebaal Peh is the Torah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu entrusts to Klal Yisrael, to give them to develop through each and every generation. Perhaps, based on this, we can understand why there is an emphasis on Lachem, on the involvement of Klal Yisrael in the holiday of Shavuos. The Gemara in Pesachim, Daf Samech Ches Amid Beis, says that even though most of the Yamim Tovim we say Chati Lachem, Chati Lachem, we spend half the day for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and half the day engaging in our own Simcha, on Shavuos, everybody agrees, even Rabbi Eliezer, who thinks that on other Yamim Tovim you can have Kulo Lachem, everybody agrees that on Shavuos you have to have Lachem. You have to have a simcha that is a person's simcha. Not just the simcha of spending time with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but simcha of lachem, of simcha of Meichel u'mishteh. Why is that? The holiday of Shavuos, which focuses on Zman Matan Torasenu, on the spiritual element of Torah, why is it so important that we have lachem, that we have our simcha? So Rav Rosenzweig explained that the emphasis on lachem, again, is because the Torah that we receive on Shavuos is not just the written Torah, the Torah Shebichsav, but it's the Torah Shebaal Peh, not only the Torah Shebaal Peh that explains the Torah Shebichsav, but the Torah Shebaal Peh that makes us partners with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and gives us the awesome responsibility and the incomparable opportunity to develop the Torah and apply it in each and every generation at every time. Dvarim Shebaal Peh Iyatai Rashay Lo'omer Bichsav, because Torah Shebaal Peh is infinite, it's meant to be taken from each generation to the next generation, and therefore Zman Matan Torah Seinu Chag HaShavuos, it itself is the holiday of Lachem. Wish everybody a great rest of the week and a good